From Adversity to Abundance, hosted by entrepreneur and seasoned real estate investor Jamie Bateman, is the ultimate guide for active and passive investors seeking clarity, mental fitness, and the confidence to make inspired decisions in the world of real estate. With a decade plus of investing experience across various niches and a background as a combat veteran, former Army officer, and multi-million dollar mortgage note company owner, Jamie brings a wealth of knowledge and inspiring stories to each episode. Through weekly episodes featuring insightful interviews with industry leaders and solo explorations of mindset and strategy, listeners will uncover actionable advice and tips to overcome challenges and build lasting financial success. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting, From Adversity to Abundance is your roadmap to turning obstacles into opportunities and achieving financial freedom.
Welcome to another episode of Real Estate Power Play. This week, I'm your host, Mark Monroe. I'm excited to have Jamie on. We met Jamie at the DMV. I call it the Seller Financing Note Conference, but it's actually DMEs because there's a lot of institutional investors there as well. And, you know, Jamie and I, we met, we had some good conversations and, you know, we're recording my podcast with Jamie today. Then afterwards, we'll jump over there. So just putting out a lot of information out. Hey, Jamie, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Mark. Yeah, this is exciting. I'm excited to be here. I was happy to meet you in person. And I'm happy to do some collaboration and hopefully the listeners get a little something out of it.
Great. Well, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about yourself, where you're at, where you're from, and your journey a little bit about your company and your background a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm based in outside of Baltimore, Maryland, on the East Coast. You and I have chatted a little bit about that, and which is nice. I've got a rental portfolio here, and then I've gotten more recently into mortgage note investing. I think we're going to dive into that a little bit. But background-wise, quite honestly, got out of college after having played Division III lacrosse and didn't quite know what I wanted to do. I won't bore everyone with every detail of my background, but it took a little bit of time to figure out really what I wanted to do. So I really missed about college lacrosse and team sports in general was just being a part of something bigger than myself and serving, you know, a mission. So I joined the military and did 8 years in the reserves. And within that time, I did 4 years of active duty time, served in Iraq, and then still didn't have a clear picture of what I wanted to get into. Transitioned over to the government. I worked for the NSA for 14 years. And during that time, I went part-time. The last 7 years, I was part-time. And during that 7 years, I started building my real estate businesses and got into single-family residential rental property investing, doing the BRRRR method, rehabs, and holding as many properties as possible. I started that in 2010, but around 2015 that's when I went part-time with my W-2. And since then, I've really kind of grown the real estate side of things, and eventually about 3 years ago, quit my W-2 entirely and have been much more focused on mortgage notes, which is similar to what you do, Mark. And so now I certainly don't know everything, but I feel like I know a good bit about, you know, residential real estate investing and many of the different ways you can make money in that space.
So you didn't really want to stay with the government, huh? As one of the government employee jobs.
Yeah, well, you know, it's one of those where, I mean, deep down, I'm probably lean more toward being more of a libertarian, but I also felt the drive to serve a purpose, and I did like the mission at the time, as you, I don't want to speak for any other civilians, but I started to get a little more cynical over the years, and probably ended up being not the best employee over the 14 years. I mean, I think I did a good job for most of that time, but then I can tell a quick story actually to answer your question about why I left the government. Really, what was the straw that broke the camel's back I had a ton of, leave built up, a lot of annual leave and sick leave, a lot of time off that I could take. And I ended up injuring myself. I ruptured my Achilles playing badminton. That's a story for another day. Not the most manly of ways to rupture your Achilles, but I ended up being unable to drive for a little over about 2.5 months, 3 months, and I was away from work during that time. So when I come back, well, first off, the only phone call I got from my supervisors at work was, "Hey, Jamie, are you vaccinated? Because you need to be vaccinated to get inside the building." And I was like, "Yes, I am, and thanks for asking how my recovery is going, because this is, fairly difficult rehab journey I'm on right here." So, didn't really feel the warm and fuzzies there, but eventually went back to work, and my desk was nowhere to be found. I felt like I was on Office Space, where they were going to move me to the basement next. And I just, again, I hadn't been the best employee for the prior year or two or so, but definitely I was just a number. And it just hit me that nobody, I mean, I don't want to say nobody cared, but it didn't matter if I left or not. And I just no longer felt the purpose was there, and the mission just wasn't calling me any longer. So, I knew it was time right there. And I literally put in my notice that first day back after that 3 month hiatus, and haven't looked back.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like that's majority of us go through that. We're a lot of people, we're trained growing up, hey, go to school, get an education, get a job, and be under the government or some type of big corporation and work your way up into management. I mean, I was in the real estate banking world for quite some time, and then I see people to get to my age now, in my 50s here, and typically, a lot of the, and I actually, my banker, I had a great banker for God, I think I worked with him for about 18 years. And you get to a certain level and they let people go because they've been there in retirement. He still had another like 7 years to go, and they just kind of threw him out. And he did a great job building businesses, going out there. I mean, he busted his ass. But what happens is, these companies, because of the way our system and society is set up, is like now the insurance is higher, and they want to cut that. They don't want to say that, but we all know what's going on behind it. Yeah, like you, I'm identical to you. I'm a libertarian. I'm about, big government. I mean, government, don't tell me what I can and cannot do. Control, don't steal my money through taxes, if you will, and let me live in my bubble. I know they're corrupt on both sides, and it's just, but again, let's not get into politics. So maybe both are kind of same thing. That's kind of where we can kind of tell, based off where we're at in our journey, where we're at, because you have to take control of your own life, and you
And
have to
that's
be able
and
to.
exactly, and don't mean to cut you off, but that's exactly the switch that I made mentally in 2015, was exactly that. I was taking control of I mean, I can't control everything, of course, but no one can control your entire destiny, that kind of thing. But I realized that this was Groundhog Day. My commute was an hour and 15 minutes at least each way, every day. And it was just like the same old thing every day. And it was just, I just realized there must be more to life than this W-2 with this long commute, and had the family and everything. And it's just like, there's got to be more. So I started to make a mental shift. I stopped watching the news, and what I did was I started listening to podcasts. And I'm not just plugging podcasts because we're on a podcast, but started listening to Bigger Pockets, all these other real estate investing podcasts, and started reading books. And I started thinking, all right, who do I know who is in my corner, who I can draw on, or who's on my team, as opposed to, woe is me, my life sucks, I have to do this stupid commute every day, and I'm not going to move up at in the government or whatever. Instead of doing that, I switched my mindset, and then I quickly went part-time, and I did have the stability of health benefits for the next 7 years. But I was able to then take some, you could say take some risks, but go out on my own and start doing the rental property investing. I'd already started it before, but really lean into it, much more at that point. But the biggest thing was taking control and taking ownership, and just that mindset piece. And that's really what moved me in that direction.
It really is. It is about the mindset, and we all go down that same journey. I mean, we all come, we all come from some type of issues in a background as a childhood, whatever you want to call it. But you can't be a victim. You have to take charge of your life. And then people that take victims, they just are held back, and you just got to move on, heal from whatever from within, and just kind of, it's all about the mindset and the mind shift. I mean, what makes, we all have the same mind. What makes a difference between Mark Cuban and, I don't know, people that are still working at the government or at McDonald's? I mean, what's, yes, there is a little bit of luck involved, but the mindset is you just keep moving forward. And I'm sure, you and I talked about that at DME, about that whole thing, and on your podcast, like what you talk about, the same thing.
Yeah, and we'll get into that, on my show. It's From Adversity to Abundance, and it really is a lot about mindset. And I know you've overcome some health issues for sure, and some other things we'll get into on that episode. But and I'm not going to go into depth too much on this at this point, but I've been through in the last few years some real personal challenges as well, family issues, and some mental health stuff with a family member, and just things that have really been very, very challenging. And I don't say that for anybody to feel bad for me. It's just we, like you said, we all go through struggles. And so when those occur, what are you going to do about it? Is are you just going to quit and just the just the mindset piece is critical for sure.
Now, you said something that was, and I want to kind of go down that path a little bit. You took a step back and you kind of started watching podcasts. You stopped being drawn towards the negativity of the news and everything, and you started listening to podcasts. But then you said you look for people that you know are in a certain corner. Why did you go down that path, and why were you starting to surround yourself with different people?
I think it was well, I'm sure a lot of your listeners have heard the phrase that you are the average of the five people that you surround yourself with. I don't know if it was that what I was if I was trying to do that intentionally or not, but I just knew pointing to my weaknesses or the challenges I would have to overcome weren't ne that wasn't necessarily gonna be practical and beneficial for my success. So what I knew was pointing to my strengths and the people in my network who could help me and would support me, and focusing on those factors would be more helpful, right? So so I started to give you more of an example, a couple of examples. I had worked for a title company. I didn't mention that before, but I'd worked for a title company for 2 years. I'd worked for a mortgage broker for 6 months or so. So I had learned a lot about title insurance and closings and things that you don't learn in school, right? And so I realized, you know what? I actually know a decent amount about how closings work and how real estate works, and transactions at least. And then I realized, my father had been a real estate agent for decades at that point. And then I realized, my brother had been a loan officer for decades as well. And so just started pointing to, focusing on my own experiences that were positive and my own strengths, and then others in my network that, I could draw upon to help me move forward, and instead of just looking at the problems and my weaknesses. So that was really helpful for me.
That's great. Yeah, I was leaning in, and like you said, you just want to surround yourself with people that's going to kind of lift you in that direction. So that's good about your journey aspect of it, where you come from. Now I want to touch base a little bit, just touch base a little bit about your rentals, and then we'll definitely get into the notes where really the meat of this is. So, you're in Maryland and you did your rental portfolio. Like, that's one, in the real estate world, that's one of the states that where I was like, oh, why do we got to stay out away from, the not so landlord friendly states, if you will. So what, tell somebody, like somebody that is thinking about doing business in one of those states, or doing business in one of those states, where some really good value of kind of helping them out, and if you have a tenant not paying or whatever the system may be, if you want to just touch base on that
Yeah,
briefly.
I mean, initially I was we were self-managing. I didn't have a property manager, which I do recommend depending on your situation if you have time, and really depends, but I we chose to self-manage, and that saved some money. I had gone part-time in 2015, so I had time to actually do some of the rehab work and some of the management, tenant screening, and the property management. So that really allowed me to be hands-on and really understand the numbers, understand the physical, you know, properties and that kind of thing. We were buying off the MLS, to be honest with you. And, you know, my father is a good negotiator and we weren't necessarily overpaying. We some of the deals were better than others, but I will say this, for your listener who may want to get into rental property investing, real estate is very forgiving over the long term. So if you take a long-term approach, you can overpay. I'm not saying you should try to overpay, right? or sign up for a bad deal, but you can overpay if you're willing to, you know, hold for the long term, and it should work out okay for you. So there were a couple properties in hindsight, maybe we paid more than we should have, but at the end of the day, rents continue to rise. Yes, some expenses have gone up, but the numbers worked for us. So most of our deals were good buys, and you know, the property values have skyrocketed since then. So for someone nowadays, whether if they're considering buying a rental in Maryland, one of the things we decided to do, and I would still personally recommend this, is staying out of Baltimore City. We decided to stay in Baltimore County only. So our rentals, they're not class A, but they're class B rentals. They're decent. They're solid, you know, mostly townhomes with no HOAs. Quite honestly, 10 years ago, the numbers were much easier to make work than they are right now with real estate prices as well as mortgage rates. I mean, it's tough right now. I mean, I'm not going to lie. But that's why we've continued to hold most of our properties. And I like our rental properties. It's a stable piece of my portfolio, and I don't spend a lot of time on them any longer because I do have a property manager. And we can get into how I've expanded into Florida rentals as well through note investing, if you'd like. But to your point about Maryland, I have yet to have to evict a single tenant. And that is, you know, primarily, maybe you could say some luck, but I think it's, one, we've stayed out of Baltimore City, and I haven't done Section 8 or any of those programs. And we do a good job screening our tenants. You can never be perfect, of course, right? I've had some issues where it was close to having to evict, but I haven't actually had to do it. So Maryland has worked out well for us.
That's great. So I just want to talk, you screen, I mean, it is key, screening tenants. Do you look for a certain customer or renter, if you will, that's like what type of job, and are your assets like single family homes, duplexes a little bit, and then the yeah. one that you getting ready to evict, what happened? You just kind of work something out with them?
Yeah, so the homes are all but one are they're all single family, but they're townhouses. You could call them row homes, but they're really more like townhouses in the county, in the Towson area, Baltimore County. No HOAs though. That was a misperception I had, you know, when I was much younger, was that, oh, I thought all townhouses must have an HOA. My dad was like, no, these that were built in the 50s and 60s, they don't have an HOA. So, you know, because I kind of wanted to shy away from dealing with HOAs as well in general. So they're older properties, but they're well built and no HOA. And so tenant screening, we do look for 650 credit score. There's certain other criteria, you know, income wise. Typically, you want to see three times the rent amount. And one of the other decisions, I won't go into all the criteria we look at, but one of the other decisions we made, which I like, we haven't changed our minds at all, I decided to accept pets. And people worry about the wear and tear on your property and that kind of thing, but pet owners stay considerably longer than those without pets. You know, so I, as many of your listeners probably know, turnover is what kills you in rental property investing. And so if you can keep your tenants happy, keep them there, you can do well. And so with people with pets, yes, there might be some wear and tear on the property. They tend to stay longer. And I don't care if there's a little wear and tear on the property, if there's not a turnover.
I totally agree on that. The same. It's just, sitting there getting, like you said, a whole year's worth of profit can go out the door if you have a unit empty for 1 month and trying to get it ready. Sure. You're so much better keeping them there. So yeah. That's good advice. So let's kind of move into, like you said, now you did the rentals and then you went into Florida rental and then you kind of went into notes. So how kind of go down that path? How did that happen?
So I got into notes in 2018. It really was that I don't want to say I was bored with rentals, but it was kind of the properties were all basically the same, and I kind of understood the process. We were fixing up these properties and then refining and taking some cash out and finding a long-term tenant, and it was working, but I just kind of wanted to do something else. I not pivot away from rentals, but just add to my, portfolio with a different asset class. And I was also looking for something you could do from anywhere, something that was a little more quote unquote passive, and that's a whole separate topic as well. But I think through BiggerPockets, the website, I stumbled on to tax liens and mortgage notes, and there's a forum on BiggerPockets that combines those two, even though they're pretty different. But I compared those two, and it was drawn to mortgage notes. So I started doing mortgage note investing with some JVs where I was the capital partner, and kind of looking over the shoulder of the more active operator. My first deal was with a guy named Chris Seveny, who's a very active mortgage note investor, and we're friends now, and we've been business partners in the past. So I started in a more passive fashion, took some courses and that kind of thing. Started doing joint ventures myself, where I was the operator, and doing selling partials. And then I started a non-performing note fund with Chris. We ran that for 3 years, and now I've for the last 3 years had the Integrity Income Fund, which is more of a re-performing note fund. So I've really scaled the note side of things. To quickly touch on the Florida property thing, that we won't have time to do a full case study, but on our website on labradorlending.com, there's a and it's also in our ebook. It walks through the case study of how we bought a non-performing note and in Jacksonville, Florida, and that turned into a rental property that I still own today. And it's one of the best performing deals I've ever had. I've never been to Jacksonville, by the way, but I didn't necessarily buy the note with the intention of acquiring a rental property. But when I looked at it, as we were nearing, we did a deed in lieu of foreclosure, so we didn't end up having to foreclose, but we got the property back. I was going to sell the property, but just looking at the numbers, I just couldn't sell it. So I held on to it, and it's done great. I think it was 2019, 2020. Maybe it was when we were doing kind of the rehab and getting it ready to rent. So for the last 5 years, that's been a quality rental for me.
It's awesome. That's and how did you come across that note? Like, kind of talk a little bit about that. Like, how do you come across these things and give a little bit people of a bit of an education?
That one was on paperstack.com, which is an online note platform and exchange that you can buy and sell and trade notes.
You like
those
that?
guys were
You like PaperStack? You like Brent?
I let I'm
Brett.
pretty good. Brett Berkey, I'm pretty good friends with Brett and Rick, and they're good guys for sure. I haven't used it as much recently, to be honest with you. But I think, well, I do use it for my own for mentorship, where I'm mentoring other newer note investors. It's a great platform to be able to expose yourself to notes if you're somewhat new to the space, to be able to, see what notes might be trading for, to understand what, due diligence might look like, and also the process of buying a note. There are a lot of steps involved. And so I know that there are many experienced note investors who continue to use the site. I haven't used it recently, and to be honest, it's a little bit slower of a transaction sometimes because it's so step by step, and you can't skip a step, and it kind of locks you into a step. And this is maybe it's improved in this way, but that was I didn't like. I'm a little impatient when it's like, all right, let's get this done, and let's not that we're going to ignore a step, but if I can knock out step eight while I'm waiting on you for step three, let's do it, right? Well, no, it forces you to wait. And then you got to wait on the other party. So I found it to be a little bit less, speedy than I liked, but it is a great platform overall, and I think those guys are doing something really good for the industry.
So what is it like a step by step? It takes them through, like somebody comes in and walks them through the step how to buy the prop, the note.
Yes. So it is a step by step. So it's like, okay, it's either the ball is either in the court of the buyer or buyer or the seller, to do the next step, whatever that is. It may be sign the purchase sale agreement, right? And then you move on from like that phase to the next phase, which is like the due diligence phase. So it might be the closing phase has a bunch of steps, and then due diligence phase, or I forget the names of the phases, but either if you're the buyer and I'm the seller, one of us has a next step to do. And it really does help you understand the process, of buying a note or selling a note, which is nice.
I've done some business. He's in my seller financing strategy program.
Got
So
it.
it's kind of because
Nice.
he's trying to do more originating the notes on the seller financing side to bringing it to his platform. So he's good.
Sure.
He's a sharp guy, and they did a
Oh,
great
for
job.
sure. Absolutely.
So anyways, how you bought that note on their platform?
Yes.
Is that nice? And
Yeah.
that's how you found it. Home run,
Yeah. I
huh?
mean, and it was like, I think some people, Florida is not quite as expensive or from a note buying standpoint, some people will shy away from the ju judicial states, and that's a whole separate podcast episode. But Florida, a lot is a state that some newer note buyers will shy away from because it can be expensive and long, a long process to foreclose if you have to. So if you're buying a non-performing note, there's a good chance you're going to need to foreclose. So I think I was able to get better pricing because a lot of the newer note investors, a lot of note investors in general, shy away from those states that are expensive and time consuming to foreclose in. So I did get a good deal on the purchase. And yeah, numbers wise, it turned out great because we ended up doing a deed in lieu. There was a lot more. The short version is that the borrower walked away without having a foreclosure to deal with foreclosure. And she also owed, the property was underwater. So she walked away. It was a good deal for her, and then for us, it was a great deal as well because I bought it so well. And that's the thing: if you buy well with a non-performing note, this is different than a long-term rental. But a non-performing note, you do need to buy well because if you overpay for a non-performing note, you're basically trying to exit that note typically within 1 to 2 years. And if you overpay for that, you're really putting yourself up against a wall there. Whereas if you don't overpay, you can make a couple mistakes here and there with the asset management, and you have a little more wiggle room because there's still some profit margin to play with.
Nice. So when you, because I know you do this in your fund, right? You buy non-performing notes as well in your
Yes,
funds.
we do. Yep.
So what's your guide? Do you have a guideline, like what type of percentage spread that you're looking for from the balance, or what do you guys
Yeah.
look at that? Like if somebody's listening now and they're interested about possibly, and we'll talk about how we can learn a little bit about investing in the fund. What do you
Yeah.
guys look at in your non-performing funds?
Yeah, so most of our in our well, if we're buying a non-performer in our fund, which we ha have done recently, we have probably about 20% of the notes in our fund are non-performing, and most of those were bought that way. But we have a buy box, and one of the criteria on that buy box is that we don't go over 75% investment to value. So that in short, the short version is the amount we're paying for the note divided by the property value, because that property value is absolutely critical in note investing, because that's your collateral. So even if you don't exit through the property, that's in a very important number. So 75% is the most that we would pay. And there are other factors. It may be 65% in a certain situation if there are other factors that push me that way. But ITV or investment to value is 75% max.
So that formula is you take what the note amount, the original balance or
No, it's
the
our
existing balance.
purchase price. So
Okay.
I don't want to say I don't care. I do care what the current balance is. That there's, but really, it's how much am I putting into this deal right now. So if the property is worth $100,000 and the principal balance is $90,000, I'm not willing to pay more than $75,000 for that. Now, there are many other variables that go into that for sure, but that's that's kind of a simple example.
Got it. Okay, that's good. I like that one a lot. Now, in today's world, for your fun, where are you guys getting most of your do you buy tapes or you buy one-offs or how were you like tell us a little bit about your current model?
Yeah. So, in the income fund, I wanted to set up something that was, quote unquote boring, for our investors and just passive income for our investors. And also that would be more reliable and predictable with a handful of non-performing notes. So we buy mostly re-performing notes in my income fund, the Integrity Income Fund. And those re-performing notes, just the short definition is that they were non-performing at some point. There were delinquencies, there were some issues in the history of those notes. So there is some higher default risk than a true performing note, right? But there's also a higher yield that we can get. So because they come with a slightly higher risk, they also come with higher yield. So where are we buying them? We will still look at PaperStack, but really there's a handful of note brokers like Dave Polio with SN Servicing. Another really great way, another source of notes is our other note investors. So maybe bigger funds or even smaller funds or other investors. If a fund has a closed-ended term, pay attention to that fund. That fund may be closing. Just kind of, if a fellow note investor is running a fund, for example, and their fund is about to close. I know when I had my 3-year fund, I had to sell off these notes, and so it's a little bit of pressure to sell them, at that time. So that's another great way. So note brokers, online exchanges, and other note investors, and I think other note investors is the one that gets overlooked pretty easily.
Yeah, that's kind of why we went to the DME, just to kind of network with other investors be able to buy notes and sell notes and vice versa.
Exactly. I mean, yes, for sure. I mean, I also went because I do mentorship. I think you do mentorship as well. So the way that we serve our active note investors is through mentorship. And then we also have the fund is for our passive accredited investors. But yes, definitely DME and other events like that. I mean, it really is, to answer your question more directly, it's about networking and relationships. And it's I don't think that's ever going to change, even if PaperStack or a similar company totally democratizes, it makes it like the New York Stock Exchange of notes. It's, I think, always going to be a relationship game. And real estate is very local. And so you can argue whether note investing is really real estate investing or not, but it's still a very local game. And I just don't think it's really ever going to be truly a national game, right? So those relationships and having boots on the ground and just making those connections in different Facebook groups, different, online events, and then also in-person events like we just went to, that can really pay off.
Oh, it's all about networking. You want to surround yourself with like-minded individuals. And quite frankly, I like to go to events sometimes where, I want to be the dumbest person in the room.
Yeah.
I want to learn from them,
For sure.
I always want to constantly learn. And that's kind of why for me, I don't really sell my notes. I like originating them. I like to hold on to them because I do like that passive income.
Right.
But it's good to know and kind of help and kind of, in the big thing out there for me on the origination side, I'm always trying to educate, because a lot of these notes aren't done correctly, especially in the seller financing side.
For sure. That's a great point. And I know, like Dave Putz and Nathan, they've done some stuff on this as well. But as far as, what makes for a good note from a buyer's standpoint, because I know a lot of these people who originate notes don't always think, what am I going to do with this if I need cash? In 2 years, maybe you think you're going to hold it forever, but life throws things at you. Maybe you decide you want to sell it. Well, if it wasn't properly underwritten and you didn't, do the docs correctly, you're not going to get what you think you're going to get for that note. So why not do it correctly the first time? Go through Dan Deppen, call the underwriter, somebody like that, to make sure it's done correctly. So that's a critical piece. That education is definitely needed, like you talked about, like you're providing, Mark.
Yeah, definitely. We need to. And that's kind of why we're always out there just educating kids. We don't want to destroy the industry of, where, we've been in it, I've been in it long enough where I've seen over the years people do things and screw it up, and then here comes more regulations come down the pipeline, and then we're controlled even more. So if we
For
control
sure.
ourselves and take care of ourselves, then we can kind of keep the regulators out of our hairs, and let's just do business ethically in the proper way of things. So Jamie, before we sign off, is there I want to talk a little bit about what you're doing, how people can reach you, and is there a question that I did not ask that I should have asked?
Oh man, that's one of my questions too. On my show. Well, how people can reach me, labradorlending.com. My email address is batemanjames@labradorlending.com. We do have solutions for both the active note investor who wants to learn more through mentorship, and we have resources and things like that. And then we also have for the accredited passive investor, the Integrity Income Fund. Man, I
I
don't
think we
know.
covered quite a bit of it. I
Yeah,
mean,
we
we got,
did.
yeah, you, you I mean, it was really, we squeezed a lot in such a short period of time
We
all
really
over the
did.
place, where, your background and, you've done a lot in the last 10 years,
Yeah, I like to think so. I think a question that we just talked about the other night on a broadcast, so I'll just throw it out there, is what would I have done differently? I think over the years I would have relied on more focus. I didn't mention that I started a servicing company, ran that for 3 years. A lot of lessons learned there. Other things that, within note investing, even that I wish I'd stayed more focused and gotten really, really good at one thing, like whether that's partials or joint ventures or, first liens in these particular states, as opposed to, I know a lot of entrepreneurs can suffer from the shiny object syndrome. And I think I did that where, I can do this, I can do that, And so I think just having more focus and really getting good at one thing and then adding on to that. I would have done that better if I could go back, but life is full of lessons learned, and that's okay.
I think that's every real estate investor. They come in
Yeah,
and they start like, oh, wow, I can make money this way. I can make money that way. There's so many ways to make money in real estate. You have, like you said, you got to stay focused, because I've seen people, and I'm sure you've seen it, they go down a path, they spend several months on it, educate themselves. Maybe they do a deal, or maybe they don't even deal, and then they're jumping and going to the other way.
right.
Then they've been in a business for a year and they haven't even made money in their real estate because they haven't mastered one transaction yet, or a
Exactly.
strategy, if you will.
My issue, sorry, yeah, my issue is I don't quit the other thing, so I keep, then I start just adding things when, and that makes me not as good at, I'm taking my eye off the ball on the other thing that I'm still doing, but not doing as well as I should be. So, but yeah, we can all learn that lesson.
Right. All right. Well, Jamie, thank you so much for coming on. I truly appreciate it. Anybody that's listening to this episode, wherever you're listening or watching, down below, you'll actually will have Jamie's all his information. So Jamie, if you could just say it one more time, but it also will be in your links wherever you're listening to it, YouTube, social media, wherever it may be. If you could say it one more time, Jamie,
Yep,
please.
labradorlending.com. And then I'll just throw out the podcast. It's at adversity2abundance.com. It's the number two, adversity2abundance.com, that you're going to be on here, Mark. So thank you so much, Mark. This is a blast. I've had a lot of fun, and I'm pretty sure your listeners are going to get something out of this one.
This was definitely a great one. So, all right, Jamie, thank you guys so much. Again, thank you all for listening to Real Estate Power Play. If you like what you hear, please like, share, and we will talk to you guys soon. Be well.
Thank you for joining us on From Adversity to Abundance. We hope today's episode has equipped you with valuable insights and practical advice to elevate your real estate journey. For more inspiring stories and resources, visit us at www.adversity2abundance.com. If this episode has inspired you, please share it with a friend who could also benefit from our conversation. Together, let's turn adversity into abundance. Until next time, keep building your mental fitness and your real estate empire.
Hey, I'm Jamie Bateman. Over the years, I've learned that success in mortgage notes and real estate investing boils down to making smart decisions quickly and confidently. That's why I'm excited to share with you the Ideal Project Analyzer, or IPA for short. a tool that's been a true game changer for me and so many other investors. This Excel-based powerhouse simplifies the entire process, letting you analyze assets in minutes and explore multiple exit strategies without second-guessing your choices. It's like having a trusted advisor built into your workflow, helping you save time and reduce risks every step of the way. With the IPA, you're not just investing smarter, you're unlocking a whole new level of success. Whether you're new to the game or you're a seasoned pro, this tool gives you the edge you need to maximize returns and streamline and present your investments to investors. And right now, you can get the IPA at an exclusively discounted rate, just $849 plus $25 per month. Trust me, this is the tool that will take your note investing and real estate investing to the next level. Visit LabradorLending.com to learn more and to see how the IPA can transform your investing journey today.